and took her phone out. She clicked the internet icon and waited. It wasn't long before a page failed to load message came up. Shaking her head, she said, "Why did they turn off our cell phones?" He snorted. "Why in the hell did they turn off the power or kill the internet? They want us in the dark, both figuratively and literally." Christy sighed. "You know, I used to hear those people talk about how the government was going to do this or that, how they were bad and not actually looking out for us. I never believed any of it." She pulled his hand up and closed both of hers around his. "But I guess they were right." "Do you think they were right?" Daniel shrugged. He was torn over the idea. Maybe they were just trying to solve the current issue. Maybe they were actually working on it. That wouldn't explain why they killed everything, though. You might be able to explain away the shutdown of the internet that way. Maybe justify killing the cell phones. Though that would really be a stretch. But the power? None of this could explain that. After thinking about it, he said, "I don't really know, babe. All I know is we've got to look out for one another. No one else is going to do that." She nodded. "At least we have the guys, too. It's nice that we're not alone in all this." She pulled away and looked at him. "Teague is still an asshole, though." Daniel smiled. "Yeah, he is. But he's got our back. That I know for certain. He's on our side. Come on, let's go back." They walked back to the van holding hands. The grass was knee-high, and he smiled as he thought of the first trip into the woods with Christy. She wouldn't leave the trail. If she couldn't see the ground, she wouldn't walk on it. Now she was in knee-deep grass and not saying a word about it. When they got back to the van, they could see Teague walking casually down the trail towards them. Getting back to the van, Bob asked, "What's the word?" "This trail ties into a paved road a couple hundred meters up there." "I don't think it's the same one we're on. I didn't see any houses or people." Bob looked around. "So we're good for the night here, then. But to be on the safe side, I say no fire."
"I was going to say the same thing," Teague replied.
"Let's all try and get some sleep and leave early in the morning," Bob said.
"I'll make sandwiches," Christy offered.
As they sat around eating their sandwiches, their cell phones began to emit the emergency alert tone. Daniel went to the van and pulled his phone off the charger.
"Due to the ongoing crisis, relief centers are being activated in the following cities."
A list of nearly every city of any size in all states was listed. It was long and detailed.
"Additionally, price controls are being put in place to prevent price gouging. All prices of commodities shall remain at the price as of the first day of the crisis. If you find prices that have been artificially inflated, text the item, its price, and business name, and location to 99999. In an effort to relieve the financial burden on people, the relief centers will begin distributing cash. While credit and debit cards are not working, cash will be distributed in the amount of $200 per adult and $100 per child. Bring your ID to the relief center and all applicable documents for children to collect your disbursement. The curfew remains in effect. Anyone caught out after 4 p.m. daily will be arrested and held until the resolution of the current situation. Also, the possession of firearms is still illegal. Anyone caught with a firearm will be arrested immediately. To this end, if you know of someone in possession of a firearm, regardless of type, text their name and address to 77777. Upon a successful arrest, you will be eligible for a cash reward. The government continues to work diligently to resolve the crisis and asks for your continued cooperation." Daniel finished reading the message and dropped the phone in his lap.
"Well, isn't that lovely?"
Teague held out his hand.
"Let me see it."
Daniel tossed the phone to him. Bob was thinking. He lit a smoke and watched the glow of the cherry.
Gene read the message and dropped his phone into his lap with little or no care. Teague, however, had a lot to say.
What a bunch of horse shit! Of course they'll give you a reward to rat on people with guns. And now that they've taken out everyone's debit cards, they'll start giving out a little bit of cash. Now everyone is totally dependent on the feds. This is getting more and more ridiculous.
Well, it doesn't mean anything to us. None of this changes our plans, Bob finally said.
It's really weird that they're giving away cash, Christie said.
Yeah, that kind of worries me.
They want you to come into some relief center, where they will just give you cash, Daniel said.
The real point to consider here is the fact there are roughly 350 million people in this country. Without getting into ratios of adults to kids, we can say they are willing to give an average of $150 per person. If only half of the people in the country show up to collect, that's $26.25 billion. And it only goes up from there. The more people that show up,
Gene paused for a moment as everyone stared at him. He continued,
now think about the complexities of distributing that much cash around the country. How long have they had this plan in place?
Bob twirled a finger by his ear.
You just did all that math in your head there, Gene?
How do you know all that? Christie asked.
I read a lot. Think about this. 1 billion in cash is 10 pallets stacked 3 feet tall of $100 bills. So we're talking like 263 pallets of cash.
Teague shook his head.
Who the hell knows this kind of shit?
With a straight face, Gene asked.
Who doesn't?
I don't, Daniel said. That's a shit ton of cash.
Gene pointed at him.
Exactly. Think about the logistics of getting that much cash and staging it. I mean, this isn't something you can do in a couple of days.
Teague snorted. They just used some of those pallets of the trillion they lost in Iraq. Gene smiled and pointed at him.
Now you're thinking. I mean, how do you lose $1 trillion? You don't. That's how.
Christie shook her head.
This is more than I can think about right now. I'm going to bed.
She sat down in the tent and kicked her shoes off. Daniel told Teague to get some sleep. He'd take the first watch. Teague jumped up.
Thanks, I'm pretty tired.
He moved towards the tent and stuck his head in. Christie pushed his head out with her foot.
Don't even think about it, she shouted.
She suddenly squealed, jerking her foot back.
Ew, did you lick my foot? You sicko!
Her foot shot back out and connected with Teague's nose. He fell back, holding his face.
Shit, Christie! I think you broke my nose.
Serves you right, you weirdo. That was nasty.
Teague sat up.
I was only playing. I wasn't trying to go in with you. Jeez, calm down.
He took his hands away and saw all the blood.
Damn it! My nose is bleeding.
Daniel went to the van and grabbed a handful of napkins, handing them to Teague.
You really need to leave her alone. She's going to hurt you.
With his head tilted back and the napkins pressed to his nose, he replied,
She already did. Should have learned sooner, Bob offered.
I think I've got it now.
Good,
Christie shouted from the tent. Teague retired to the van to nurse his nose. Bob bid a good night and went to the van with Gene, who helped him get up into his reclined seat. Daniel settled into one of the camp chairs for a long night on watch. But staying awake wasn't hard, as there was a lot on his mind. Not to mention, the chorus of frogs from the pond was in full crescendo. After a couple of hours, he got up and walked over to the edge of the pond. He stood listening to the ruckus the frogs were calling out and all their number. He watched the stars as they moved overhead. With the power out, the nation was dark, and celestial formations he'd only previously seen while in the mountains were clearly visible tonight, as well as others he'd never seen. Daniel stood for a long time just looking up into the sky. His mind drifted back to the physics classes in college and the explanation of the universe and the fact it was supposedly still expanding. The thought of all that vastness out there made him feel small and insignificant. The troubles here on this small part of this one small planet seemed so infinitesimal. But that thought actually gave him heart in some strange way. The fact that, as big as the problems facing them seemed, they wouldn't even warrant a footnote in the history of the universe. How many other worlds are out there right now? He thought. He remembered reading somewhere once that everything that happened here on Earth had already happened on another planet and would still happen on others in the future. He was about to return to the van when there was a change in things. He more felt it than anything, and it took him a few minutes to figure out what it was. Light. Where the hell is that coming from? He asked himself as he looked around. It wasn't a direct source, but suddenly there was light. Walking out to the edge of the pond, he looked around. Off to the north, there was a very definite glow in the sky. What the hell? Teague, wake up, Daniel said, as he gently shook his cousin. After the second rousing, Teague bolted up, fumbling for his carbine. What? What is it? Daniel held a finger to his lips. Shh! Come here. I want to show you something. Teague collected his carbine and pulled his boots on. What is it? Just come on, you'll see. Teague followed him out to the pond. Daniel stopped near the edge of the small water hole and looked at Teague as if to say, see? Teague looked around. What? What am I supposed to see? Daniel pointed up at the northern horizon. See the light? Teague was scratching his head. Yeah, I do now. He yawned big and asked, huh, what's that way? I think Jackson, Mississippi is over there. You got your phone? Teague asked. Daniel pulled it out of his back pocket. Yeah, why? Teague pointed at the phone. See if Jackson is on that list of relief cities. Daniel scrolled through the long list of cities on the message from earlier. After a moment, he said, yeah, here it is. Teague nodded. Makes sense then. They're turning the power back on to those cities. But why did they kill it in the first place? Rubbing his face, Teague said, well, after 3 days, any fresh food in people's fridges has gone bad. They've also probably run out of cash, and the stores are certainly empty. So they swoop in to save the day, save everyone from the crisis they created. Daniel thought about it for a moment. I see what you're saying, but I don't think the government did this. Of course you don't. You suffer from normalcy bias. You don't want to see it. Don't want to see what's right in front of you. I don't suffer from anything. I just don't think the government would do this kind of thing. Teague laughed as he stretched. Why wouldn't they? Do you keep track of treasury auctions? Daniel shook his head. Of course you don't. And I suppose you do, Daniel shot back. I know you think I'm a dumbass, but yes, I do. The recent auctions have had very little demand. If they can't sell bonds, they can't create money out of thin air. If they can't create money, they can't spend it. Just the interest on the debt is almost everything the Treasury was collecting. So it's kind of convenient that this happens now. Daniel's wheels were turning now. They could declare the debt null and void because of this. Teague pointed at him. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. And that will cause issues all over the world. How much do you want to bet that the cash they're handing out
in those relief centers is some new dollar. The thought shocked Daniel. He hadn't even considered the possibility of a new dollar. That would also mean all the money everyone has is worthless.
Starting to see the big picture now?
Wow. I never really thought about it all like this. The big picture, you know?
Teague slung his carbine over his shoulder. I have been for years. I've been expecting it. Was really curious why it took so long. We saw the writing on the wall.
Daniel raised an eyebrow. Is that the same we that carried out that action in Michigan?
Without skipping a beat, Teague replied.
Yes, same ones. We've been planning for this for a long time. The thing in Michigan wasn't really part of the plan, though. It was just an opportunity that presented itself. We had to make a statement at that time. And I'm paying the price now. We were set up and ready. Now I'm here with you, with nothing.
It just seems so surreal.
Teague patted Daniel on the back.
Go get some sleep, buddy. I'll stay up the rest of the night.
Daniel went to the tent. Christy was sleeping softly, and he tried not to disturb her. Getting into his sleeping bag, Daniel lay there for some time. His mind was spinning. There was so much to think about, but eventually the fatigue of the day overcame him, and he nodded off. Once again, Daniel woke to the aroma of coffee. He was surprised not to see Christy. She was already up. He pulled on his boots and climbed out of the tent. Everyone was up as he rubbed the sleep from his eyes.
Why didn't you guys wake me up?
He asked. Christy smiled. You needed the sleep. Jean was sitting by the small folding table. Its top was covered with canned food and other assorted food items. Daniel flopped into a chair as Christy handed him a cup.
We have a problem, Bob said.
What? Daniel asked. Bob pointed at the table.
That's all the food we have left. Plus, we're nearly out of water.
Daniel looked at the table.
Well, water isn't a problem. I have a filter. We can refill the jugs we have, but I don't know what to do about the food.
We can hunt, Teague suggested.
We don't have that kind of time, Bob replied.
So what do we do? Christy asked.
One meal a day. We're not too far away. We'll just have to make it work, Daniel said.
I don't like to be hungry, Jean said with a frown.
Bob laughed.
Tighten your belt, old friend.
Jean wrinkled his nose at the statement. All we have to do is get across Louisiana and we're there. We're almost out of Mississippi. We could be there today.
Jean looked at the table of food.
We better be.
Christy got up and went to the table.
Don't worry, Jean. I'll fix us something before we get on the road.
That offered Jean a little relief. He sat back and smiled.
Thanks.
I'll go fill our water jugs, Daniel said.
I'll help,
Teague offered, as Daniel collected the empty 1-gallon jugs.
Daniel looked at him. Dude, you look like shit.
Teague glared at Christy.
Yeah, well, someone gave me 2 black eyes.
Christy was working a can opener on a can and didn't look up to reply.
Bet you don't stick your nose in places it shouldn't be anymore.
Teague reached up and touched his very tender nose, but said nothing in reply. Instead, he collected a couple of jugs and followed Daniel. They went out to the pond and looked for a place where they could get to the water. Finding it, Daniel knelt down with his Katadin Hiker Pro filter and dropped the intake into the brown water. It bobbed in the grass-filled water as he unwrapped the discharge tube. He replaced the original one with a longer piece. The one that came with it was ridiculously short.
Teague held the discharge tube in the jug as Daniel pumped. It didn't take long to fill the first one. Teague capped it and held it up. The water was a light brown in color. Teague's face contorted.
That looks like shit.
Daniel laughed as he uncapped the next jug.
It'll be all right.
There's tannic acid in the water. It won't hurt you.
Acid? Teague asked.
Comes from decaying vegetation.
And you can drink it?
Daniel nodded.
Yeah, but if you drink lots of it, I mean like a steady diet, it could turn your hair and fingernails yellow.
What?
Daniel laughed. You're not going to drink that much, I promise. Besides, when you make coffee, it turns the water brown.
Yeah, but that's coffee, not rotted shit.
They filled the rest of the jugs and headed back to the group.
Christy had a pot sitting on Daniel's Whisper Light stove. He'd selected it because it was multi-fuel and could burn any of several different fuels. It was a little heavier than others and not as efficient as, say, a jet boil, but he felt the versatility was a worthy trade-off.
Bob, being a bachelor, lived on quick and easy to prepare foods.
To that end, he'd stocked his pantry with things like Dinty Moore beef stew and Sweet Sue chicken and dumplings. There were 3 cans of each of these, and the group had saved them. But as today was hopefully the last day on the road, Christy was heating the chicken and dumplings.
Daniel looked into the pot that was ridiculously large compared to the small stove.
Man, that smells good.
Gene was sitting at the small table with a bowl in front of him and spoon in his hand.
Yes, it does. Is it ready yet?
Christy laughed.
Hang on, Gene. It'll be better if it's hot.
Gene nodded.
Make it so, number one.
Daniel chuckled.
You a Star Trek fan, Gene?
Star Trek, Star Wars, Stargate, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Love them all.
Christy smiled.
You're just full of surprises, Gene.
She held out her hand.
Give me your bowl.
He quickly handed it over, and she spooned some out for him, then served the rest of the group. After their unconventional breakfast, they loaded the van and got back on the road. While waiting for Gene to close the gate behind them, Daniel looked at Bob.
All right, which way?
Bob had the atlas in his lap.
Well, we have the Mississippi River in front of us. There aren't that many bridges, and most of them are in larger cities. I just don't think that's a good idea. The closest one to us, not in a major city, is in Greenville, which is north, northwest of here. If we cross there, then we'll be in Arkansas, which might actually be a good thing.
Lead the way,
Daniel said. Bob pointed left, and Daniel pulled out. The trip to Greenville was a long and winding trip. It took them through small towns with names like Bovina, Redwood, and Foot. It was also surprisingly uneventful.
You guys notice how many more cars on the road today?
Teague shouted from the rear of the van.
Yeah, Daniel shouted back. And it looks like all of them are headed to Jackson, or at least that direction.
Makes sense, Bob said.
They're all headed out to get themselves some government stash money.
Christy climbed up between the front seats.
You know, I'm really surprised we've done this as easily as we have.
Bob shook out a smoke and lit it, more to annoy her than anything else. That, and the fact that a cigarette in his hand was his natural state.
You forgetting about the 2 dead men? He asked.
Christy scowled at him.
No, I'm not. But we've really not had that much trouble considering how far we've gone. I really didn't expect to make it this far. When we started, it seemed like so far to go.
We ain't there yet, Bob said.
He asked for one of the water jugs. Christy handed one up to him. Bob looked at the off-color water then at Daniel.
What the hell did you do? Piss in these?
Daniel smiled. No, just yours.
Bob eyed the jug with no small degree of suspicion.
This looks like shit.
Daniel laughed.
That's what's wrong with our country. Everyone is so used to everything being perfect.
It ain't going to hurt you. Drink it.
Bob spun the cap off and held the jug out to Daniel.
You drink it.
He took the jug, turned it up, and took a long pull. With his cheeks full of water that dripped down his chin, he looked at Bob and swished it around before swallowing.
See? It ain't going to hurt you.
And handed it back. Bob looked down into the opening and gritted his teeth. He took a cautionary sip at first, smacking his lips to taste the brown-tinted water. Deciding it was safe, or maybe that he was just thirsty, he took a long drink. After capping the jug and handing it back to Christy, he said,
"That has an odd taste. If I get the shits, it's your ass."
Daniel howled and slapped the steering wheel. "It's surface water. You get the shits, and it's your ass, Bob." At the Swiftwater Baptist Church, Bob told Daniel to take a left. The bridge was just down the road now. If they could make it over the river, they would be home free. There were no other large obstacles in their way. On either side of the road was empty farmland they could see all the way across. Bob was getting worried. The bridge was a natural choke point, and he just knew there would be a roadblock and possibly vehicle searches. He told Daniel to pull over.
"Why?"
Daniel asked.
"Just pull over."
Daniel slowed the van to a stop on the shoulder of the road, along a dusty field. Bob got out, so Daniel killed the engine and climbed out with everyone else.
"What's up, Bob?"
Gene asked. Bob leaned against the front of the van and pointed at the causeway leading up to the bridge.
"I'm worried about that bridge. Perfect place to stop and search vehicles."
"Wish we had some binoculars," Daniel said.
"We have something a little better,"
Gene said as he opened the driver's door and leaned in. He came back out with the laptop they had brought along from Bob's house.
"I spent some time the other night messing with these while everyone was asleep. It took a while, but I found the camera utility on one of my thumb drives and installed it."
He opened the laptop and clicked on an icon. A window opened on the screen, and after a moment, the image of the road in front of them filled it. Using the mouse pad, Gene manipulated some buttons in the screen, and the image began to move.
"I put this together in case we had to drive in the dark. But these cameras have a 30 times optical zoom, plus some digital. We should be able to see if there is anything up there."
As the image moved around on the screen, Bob smiled.
"God, I love you, Gene."
Without looking up from the computer, Gene replied,
"The answer is still no."
"Oh, I have my spotting scope, too,"
Daniel shouted as he returned to the van. The group crowded around as Gene moved the camera view to the bridge, then started to zoom in. As the magnification grew, the bridge came into much closer view. There was a line of cars, maybe a dozen, on the bridge. Then they saw the black MRAP with its blue lights flashing.
"Shit, that's what I was afraid of. If we get searched, we're screwed,"
Bob lamented. "Is there anywhere we can hide the guns?" Christy asked, knowing, as they all did, what the issue was. Bob looked at Gene and raised an eyebrow. Gene looked into the open side door of the van. Gene rubbed his whiskers.
"I don't know. There isn't much in the way of options."
Daniel had set the scope up on a tripod. He was looking at the bridge when he replied,
"Yeah, there is."
As he went to the rear of the van, he took out the small toolkit he stored in the pocket in one of the doors and walked around to the front. Kneeling down, he opened the kit.
"You remember how I told you I didn't have my guns anymore?"
Bob smiled.
"Yes, and I knew you were lying."
Christy looked at him, confused.
What do you mean? You said you sold them.
Taking out a small Allen wrench, he looked up at her.
That's what I told you, but there was no way I was selling my guns.
He took a small screw out from the bottom of one of the caps on the end of his bumper. Reaching up into the large steel square tube, he pulled out a piece of tightly wrapped foam. Setting it on the ground, he carefully untied it and unrolled the foam to reveal a disassembled AR and a Glock pistol. Bob laughed.
That's a hell of an idea, kid.
Gene was immediately at the bumper. He pulled a small tape measure from his pocket and measured the bumper and the one disassembled rifle. After a moment, he said,
We can get four rifles in there if we take them apart like this.
What are we going to do with the others? Teague asked.
Daniel nodded at the rear of the van.
There's another bumper back there.
Gene smiled.
We can fit them all.
What about the ammo? Daniel asked.
We should be able to stuff it all in the rear bumper, Gene said. We don't have that many rifles, but we're going to have to pitch the shotguns from the other night.
We don't need them, Bob said.
Gene, Daniel, and T got to work taking the weapons apart. To fit them into the bumper, they had to remove the pistol grips as well. Fortunately, Daniel kept the proper tools in the van for the job. While they were working on the guns, Christy had Bob sit down so she could look at his wounds. Christy finished going over Bob's wounds about the time the guys finished storing the guns. Daniel was about to put the cap on when Bob walked up.
Let's put our IDs in there, too.
Why? Daniel asked.
Couple of reasons. One, you and I were supposed to talk to the FBI. They could be looking for us. Two, if we need to do some creative talking, I don't want them to have anything they can pin us down with.
The explanation seemed logical, so everyone placed their wallets in and the cap was secured to the bumper.
What if they ask for our names? Christy asked.
Daniel shrugged. I guess we'll wing it. The approach to the bridge was long and elevated. Once on it, there was no turning around. Daniel gripped the wheel a little tighter as he watched the crest of the road ahead of him, waiting to see the large armored trucks appear. Bob turned in his seat.
Gene, you're my brother. The rest of you are my kids.
Like hell, Teague shouted.
Shut up and listen. We need a story. We're heading to my mom's place in Hot Springs. If we're questioned, we need a decent story.
Gene started to laugh.
Over the bridge and through the woods to Grandma's house we'll go.
Christy started to laugh, but stopped when Daniel spoke.
There's the truck, he said.
Then he corrected himself.
I mean trucks.
Bob looked up.
Oh, shit.
Ahead of them was a proper roadblock with several MRAPs and many men. They had the bridge blocked at its center.
Yep, they're looking to catch people out here. Once you're on this, there's no way to turn around, Bob said.
They're searching every car, Daniel said.
Just remember what I said, Bob reminded them.
As they approached the roadblock, a man waved for them to slow down. Daniel did as instructed and rolled to a stop. Several men approached the van and ordered everyone out and demanded their IDs. These were what you'd expect of the modern, militarized, federal tactical ninjas. They wore black uniforms, kitted out with all manner of molly pouches, thigh holsters, and tactical vests that read police in white letters on the back. The black balaclavas covering their faces topped the ensemble off.
Christy quickly said, We don't have our IDs. We were robbed.
When Bob opened his door, the man standing there looked at his leg.
What happened to you?
Bob shook his head.
We had a hard time getting out of Atlanta. And like she said, we were robbed a couple of times.
The uniformed man looked at the van.
That why you did all this?
Bob nodded and made a pained expression as he tried to exit the van. The man held out a hand.
You can stay in your seat.
The rest of the group got out as the men manning the roadblock began searching the van's interior. The man standing beside Bob asked,
Where are you headed?
To my mom's place in Hot Springs. We figured it was better than Atlanta. I was able to get my sons and daughter rounded up and picked up my brother on the way out as we headed west.
The man nodded and asked, Any weapons in the van? Bob shook his head.
No, sir, no weapons in the van at all.
He smiled inside at the fact and irony of the statement. Another uniformed man asked Teague,
What happened to your face?
Christie quickly threw an arm around Teague, which startled him.
We were robbed. He fought with them, and my brother is the only reason we still have the van.
Teague nodded.
We've had a hard time.
The search ended up being rather cursory at best. The uniformed men gathered and spoke quietly. Daniel started to get worried and began biting his fingernails. Christie saw this and took his hand. He looked at her, and she smiled, mouthing the word, relax. After a moment, one of the men returned and said,
You can go. Just remember there is a curfew. You do not want to be caught out after dark.
Bob smiled and nodded.
Indeed. We'll be off the road by then. Thank you.
The group quickly got back in the van and continued across the bridge. Daniel was drumming the wheel with his thumbs.
I nearly shit myself.
Bob laughed.
Wasn't anything to it. No big deal.
Because we were able to hide those guns, Gene said.
Teague grunted. Let's hurry up and stop somewhere so we can put them back together. I feel totally naked.
Bob looked at his watch. Let's roll for a couple of hours. We got a little time before we need to be off the road.
In Lake Village, Arkansas, they turned west and drove through neat farm fields, flat as a pool table. They passed through a couple of small towns that Norman Rockwell would have seen as sparse. They seemed totally devoid of life. There was no one out at all. That changed when they reached the town of Hamburg. Hamburg is a small town nestled in a grove of hardwoods. Just outside of town, beside a sign announcing the annual Armadillo Festival, was a roadblock. As Daniel slowed the van, he said,
We're so close.
Teague leapt up between the seats to look.
I told you we should have put the guns back together.
I just can't believe it, Bob said.
I know. What are we going to do? Daniel asked.
Only in Arkansas could you have a damn festival for something as nasty as a damn armadillo. Bob said.
Daniel looked at him.
What?
Bob pointed out the windshield at the sign.
You don't see that damn billboard with a giant rat in the armor suit on it?
Screw the sign. What about those guys?
Daniel shouted. The roadblock consisted of a couple of sheriff department cars and several civilian vehicles. Behind these stood many armed men of uncertain intent. Much like the last group, these two were kitted out and tactical of the day, save one major difference. No two of them were alike. All had various camo patterns, and their personal kit varied from man to man. Bob held a hand out behind him.
Give me your kerchief, Gene.
Gene pulled a white handkerchief out of his hip pocket and handed it forward. Bob shook it out. Rolling down his window, he held it out as high as he could through the gun port.
Drive forward, real slow.
Daniel started to sweat. He didn't know why. Maybe it was all those men pointing guns at him. But he did what Bob said. He'd gotten them this far. They rolled slowly forward as the men behind the barricade held their positions. When they were about 30 meters from the barricade, the PA from one of the sheriff cars crackled to life.
Stop. Everyone get out of the vehicle. Keep your hands where we can see them.
All right, everyone. Real slow. Get out, Bob said.
They all slowly got out, holding their hands high over their heads. "Step in front of the vehicle and spread out on the road," the loudspeaker shouted.
"This is bullshit," Teague muttered.
"Daniel?" Christie said quietly.
"Just stay close, babe," he replied. "Everyone just stay calm," Bob said.
They spread out on the road as instructed and waited. Once they were all out on the road, several men came out from behind the barricade, walking towards them with weapons at low ready.
"Shit, shit, shit," Teague muttered.
"Be cool," Bob said. "These guys look different. I don't think they're feds."
As they got closer, details began to appear. Several of the men had a Velcro patch of the Texas flag on their chest. Some were bearded, and at least one wore a cowboy hat. The deputies were in uniform, however.
"You're right, Bob.
These look like my kind of people," Teague said. The group of men spread out in front of them and stopped. One of the deputies stepped forward, his rifle at low ready, and he looked them over.
"Where are you going?" he asked.
"We're headed to Texas," Bob replied.
One of the men with a beard and the Texas flag on his chest asked,
"What for?"
"We heard it was the land of reason, that Texas told the feds to shove their martial law up their ass, that the power was still on and the grid was cut from the rest of the country."
The bearded man cocked his head to the side and asked,
"And just how did you hear all that?"
Bob gestured with his head towards Gene.
"He's my ham guy and has a radio."
The group of men closed ranks, talking amongst themselves. After a moment, they broke up and the bearded man asked,
"Texas ain't got room for any freeloaders. You got any weapons?"
"I thought we were in Arkansas," Bob said.
The man nodded.
"You are."
"Then who are you guys?"
Pointing at the deputies, the man replied,
"They're with the Ashley County Sheriff's Office."
Then, thumping the Texas patch on his chest, added,
"We're Texas militia."
Bob cracked a smile.
"So the Texas militia invaded Arkansas?"
The militia members laughed. The joke made everyone relax as the men lowered their weapons. Bob lowered his hands, as did Teague and Gene. Daniel and Christie kept theirs up.
"No, we decided to create a bit of a buffer for ourselves," the bearded man replied.
"Plus, the federal government can kiss our ass," one of the deputies shouted.
The bearded man pointed at Bob.
"What happened to you?"
Bob looked down at his bare legs.
"Bullet."
One of the deputies looked back over his shoulder and called out,
"Hey, Doc."
Another man appeared from behind the barricade and jogged up. The deputy pointed at Bob and told him to take a look. As the man walked over, Bob held a hand up.
"I'm fine. We've got our own doc."
And he pointed at Christie.
The man looked at her. "You a doctor?"
"No, I'm a critical care nurse. I was working in a pediatric center in Atlanta."
"Holy shit! You guys drove all the way from Atlanta?"
The bearded man crowed. Bob took a cigarette pack from his shirt pocket and shook a smoke out, lit it, and blew out the smoke before replying,
"Yep."
Seeing the cigarette, the bearded man licked his lips and rubbed his chin.
"You got an extra one of those?"
Bob laughed and looked at the cigarette.
"That's like asking if I got extra money."
He paused for just a moment before pulling the pack out again and walking towards him, offering the smoke. After lighting it with his own lighter, the man held out his hand.
"Thanks. Name's Matthew Ward. Call me Matt. We ran out yesterday, and I'm about to lose my mind."
After shaking his hand, Bob offered him the pack.
"Here, keep it. I've got a couple more. Call me Bob."
Matt smiled.
"Thanks, Bob. You're all right. Let's go meet the guys."
He looked past Bob at Daniel and Christie. With a laugh, he said,
"You guys can put your hands down."
Chapter 12. After introductions were made, Daniel drove the van into town. Matt rode with them to the town square. He directed them to park across the street from an orange building. The sign over it read, Sawyer's Steakhouse.
"Figure you guys are probably hungry," Matt said, as he got out of the van.
"Yes, we are," Gene replied.
Bob looked up at the gaudy orange building.
"What's for dinner?"
Matt smiled.
"Brisket."
Gene pushed past the two men, making for the open door of the restaurant, shouting,
"Make a hole! Make a hole!"
They went inside and took a seat.
"You'll love the food," Matt said.
It wasn't long before a medium-height, pie-faced man with what appeared to be a perpetual smile walked up in a white apron tied around his waist. He was wiping his hands on a small towel.
"Howdy, folks. Hope you all are hungry. Today we've got brisket, mashed potatoes, and green beans."
Matt smiled.
"This is Tommy. Really knows his way around a smoker."
"Wait," Christy said. "Tommy? Like Tom Sawyer?" Tommy smiled.
"Exactly like that, but everyone calls me Tommy."
Gene picked up a napkin and tucked it into the top of his shirt.
"Sounds good to me, Tommy."
Picking up a fork, Gene added,
"Bring on the brisket."
Tommy laughed.
"Sounds good, folks. I'll be right back. Sweet tea good for everyone?"
Bob nodded.
"We're from Georgia, Tommy. There isn't any other kind."
Tommy chuckled and disappeared.
"That's really funny, Tom Sawyer," Christy said with a big smile.
Daniel laughed at her.
"What?"
she asked.
"You're funny."
Matt leaned in on the table.
"Tom is a really good man. He feeds anyone that needs it, no questions asked. He's been taking care of us since we came up."
Teague seized the opportunity to ask some questions. "What's your plan? What are you guys doing?" Matt let out a breath.
"We're just trying to keep a buffer between us and the feds. We're not sure what they're up to just yet."
Bob laughed.
"Texas not big enough for you guys?"
Matt smiled.
"You guys don't know, do you?"
"Know what?" Daniel asked.
"The Republic of Texas is a lot bigger now."
Bob leaned back in his seat.
"I know you Texans like to call it a republic, but I've got a feeling there's more to it now."
Smiling, Matt nodded.
"Oh, yes, there is.
The state legislature passed secession, and the governor signed it. We are now really the Republic of Texas."
"You left the U.S.?" Christy asked in surprise.
Matt nodded affirmatively.
"About damn time someone got the balls," Teague added.
"You're not worried about what the government is going to do?" Daniel asked.
"Of course there's a concern, plus it's not going smoothly, but we're set on this path. It's the law of the Republic now."
"You said the Republic was bigger," Bob said. Matt nodded.
"New Mexico and Oklahoma joined us. Arizona is probably going to as well."
"What about the federal assets? Texas has a lot of military bases, not to mention the Border Patrol and other federal departments," Bob asked.
"We seized it all," Matt said. "Most of the personnel went along with it. Those that didn't were escorted to the border and released. We changed the logo on the Border Patrol equipment, gave them new patches, and issued new rules of engagement. Things are a little different down there now."
"And all that happened without issue?" Bob asked.
Matt shrugged.
"Well, no. There was some trouble. Plus, there are a couple of DHS facilities that are holding out, but they've been told to surrender or a column of M1s is going to roll out of Fort Hood and turn their building into a pile of broken rock."
Tommy showed up with plates and served everyone. He then returned with glasses of tea. The talk paused while everyone ate.
"Enjoy,"
Tommy said, as he walked back to the kitchen.
Oh, wow, this is some damn good brisket, Daniel said.
Yeah, it is, Christy added. After the last few days, anything fresh is good.
With a fork full of potatoes, Matt said,
And it's all fresh. He makes these from scratch. Even the beans were grown locally.
What do I have to do to join the militia? Teague asked.
You just have to sign up. We can get you kitted up if you need it, Matt replied.
Why are you going to do that? Daniel asked.
Teague dredged a bite of brisket through a small bowl of sauce, so I can kill as many of those federal fuckers as possible.
So far, we've been lucky and haven't had any engagements, Matt replied.
I'm ready for it. Done it once already, Teague replied.
Bob used a piece of meat to mop his plate.
You know they're sitting on the bridge over the Mississippi in refuge, don't you?
Matt nodded.
We know they're there, but they don't know we're here. We've been watching them since they showed up, but they haven't ventured to this side of the river. Not sure why.
They had a lot of armor over there, Teague noted.
Pushing his plate away, Matt replied,
I know, but our rules of engagement are pretty clear. We are defensive only. We're not looking to start a shooting war with the feds, but if they press us, we will defend ourselves.
Jean hadn't said anything, focusing instead on his meal. But he was done now. Pulling the napkin from his shirt, he dropped it on his plate.
You really think a militia with a few small arms can take on a column of MRAPs?
Matt smiled and shook his head.
No, I don't. It's not here yet. But we're moving armor closer to the border. A lot of the military sided with us, the ones here anyway. We've got fighters flying combat air patrols, and we've got naval vessels off the coast. We're doing what we can to protect ourselves.
This is so weird, Christy said. States leaving.
We didn't leave it. It left us, Matt said. He waved a hand in the air. This whole financial crisis is all BS. They shut everything down, turned off cell phones and the internet. We didn't ask for any of that. They're not helping us.
They're handing out money now, Daniel said.
Matt snorted.
Yeah, new money.
Surprised, Bob asked.
What? Oh, yeah. That money they're handing out, it's a new dollar. We think this was their plan the whole time. They did all this to introduce a new dollar.
Have you seen it? Daniel asked. Matt pulled a cell phone from his tactical vest and pulled up a picture. It was a colorful piece of red currency with a man's portrait on it.
Yeah, they have Roosevelt on it. Not even one of the founders. I think they're sending a message.
Bob took the phone and looked at it.
Where'd you get this? We politely asked the DHS to leave one of their facilities. They resisted at first, but gave up when they realized it was a no-win for them. They wanted to take everything with them, but we made them walk out empty-handed. They burned most of their stuff, but we got some of it.
So it was already here, before all this started? Bob said.
Matt pointed at him.
Exactly.
Can we get to Texas? Daniel asked. Matt sat back and tucked his hands into his vest.
I don't see why not. It shouldn't be an issue. Do you have some place to go?
Daniel shook his head.
No, we just thought it was better here, so we came.
We're working out of Red River. We can take you there and see what we can do,
Matt replied.
When can we go? Christy asked.
We can go anytime you want, Matt replied.
I want to stay with you guys, Teague said.
Matt sat forward.
You're left to go to Texarkana to enlist in the militia. It's a little more formal than just saying that you're in.
Why are you going to do that? Christy asked.
Teague shook his head. I told you before, someone has to do it. Why shouldn't it be me?
Matt stood up.
Let me go talk with some folks, and I'll see what I can do about getting you guys down to Red River.
Tommy came out from the kitchen.
What'd you folks think of the food?
It was fantastic. I am a fan, Gene said.
Bob nodded with a laugh.
And you can take that to the bank. If Gene likes it, it's pretty good.
Tommy smiled. Well, I'm glad you folks enjoyed it. They walked out to the van. Matt told them to hang out while he went and talked to some people. Bob leaned against the van and lit a smoke. Gene opened the side door and sat down. Looking up at Teague, he asked,
Were you touched by someone in uniform as a kid?
Teague looked at him.
What?
Deadpan, Gene said,
You seem to have a lot of hate for folks in uniform. Just curious if you had a bad experience as a kid. You know, like someone touching you or something.
Bob lowered his head to hide the fact he was smiling.
Screw you, Gene,
Teague shouted. Gene pointed at him.
See? So much hate. Takes a lot of hate to hide that much sadness.
Teague was fuming.
Fuck off!
He turned and walked away. Gene laughed.
I think he's been buggered.
That's just mean, Gene, Christy said. Gene looked at her.
No, it's not. He knows I'm just messing with him.
She looked at Teague. He was standing at the back of the van with his foot on the bumper.
I don't think he does. What's wrong with you guys? Why are you so mean to one another?
Bob laughed.
Because we're guys, it's what we do.
Christy looked at Daniel. He shrugged and said, Don't look at me. He's right. When Teague and I were kids, we were mean as hell to one another. She shook her head.
But saying he was molested as a kid, that's really horrible.
Gene laughed.
That's what makes it so funny. Besides, he'll get over it.
Christy shook her head. I do not and never will understand you guys. Bob flicked his butt to the curb.
Well, if you ever figure it out, please let me know. I'd like some clarity.
Matt returned from his trip to the courthouse across the street.
We've got the nod to go. We can leave now if you want. I'll go with you guys, too. Got some stuff to take care of down there.
Daniel smiled.
Cool, let's go.
Everyone loaded into the van for the last leg to the great state of Texas.
How long is it going to take us to get there? Daniel asked.
About 3 hours or so, Matt replied.
It's going to be dark before we get there, Christy said, with an air of concern in her voice.
Matt laughed. Don't worry about that. That curfew crap doesn't exist out here.
Even though the city of Texarkana straddles the border of two states, the entire city had power due to its connection to the Texas grid. They arrived about 9 p.m. at the outskirts of the city, where they were stopped at a checkpoint, manned by men wearing the same Texas state flag Matt wore. Seeing the checkpoint, Daniel slowed.
What do we do?
Matt waved him forward.
Just keep going.
Unlike the roadblock in Hamburg, no one pointed guns at them. Four men manned the checkpoint, and while they had tactical-style vests on with weapons, they were worn over Wranglers and checkered shirts. These men looked more like cowboys than soldiers. Daniel rolled to a stop where Matt indicated. One of the men walked up to the van as Bob rolled his window down. Matt leaned forward and said,
Hey, Jesse.
The man pushed a dusty, worn Stetson back on his head.
Hey, Matt, you guys got here quicker than I expected.
Matt nodded.
Yeah, this young feller here has a lead foot.
Jesse stepped back and looked at the van.
Hell of a contraption you got here.
We started in Atlanta. It was a rough trip, Bob said.
Jesse looked at the door where Bob sat.
I'd say so.
He looked back at Matt.
You heading to the depot?
Matt nodded.
Yeah, got to see them before figuring out what to do with these guys.
Jesse waved.
All right, see you later.
Matt patted Daniel's shoulder.
Go ahead.
Daniel pulled away, following Matt's directions. He told Daniel to get onto I-30. Daniel looked at him and asked, Are you sure? We've been avoiding the interstates. Matt smiled.
You're in Texas now. Things are different.
Christy leaned forward.
We're in Texas now? We made it?
Daniel looked at her. We made it. Matt had him exit at Hooks, and they pulled up to the very nondescript gate of the sprawling Red River Army Depot. As they approached it, Christy asked, "What is this place?" They stopped at the gate, that was now manned by uniformed men wearing the Texas Republic flag. Matt showed his ID to the guard at the gate, who quickly waved them through. Bob noted that. Thinking it interesting, they had already issued photo IDs to members of the militia.
Its primary mission is the repair and maintenance of heavy equipment, tanks, MRAPs, that sort of thing, Matt said.
So, this place is full of armor? Teague asked. Matt turned and smiled at him.
Yeah, it is. We've been getting some of it back into service. That's why I came down with you, to take one back.
Look at the size of this place, Bob said, as they drove through the massive complex of industrial-looking buildings. Jean was looking out the window as they passed one of the sprawling buildings. The huge rolling doors were open, and a hoist was moving an entire M1 Abrams tank through the air.
This looks like my kind of place.
Matt looked at him.
They could probably use the help. We lost some people here who didn't agree with the secession. So if you're mechanically inclined, they could use you.
Jean smiled.
I spent 26 years in the Navy. You could say I'm mechanically inclined.
Bob looked at Matt.
He's really good.
Matt pointed to a small brick building. Pull up there. Daniel turned into a parking spot and stopped, where they all got out. Daniel looked around at the massive facility that was very busy, even at nearly 10 o'clock at night. Christy walked up to him and wrapped her arms around his waist. He smiled and leaned in and kissed her.
Let me go in and check on some things. I'll see if I can find you guys a place to stay. Jean, you want to come in and see if you can help out here?
Jean nodded.
Yes, I do.
Looking at Teague, he asked, You still want in the militia?
Damn right, he replied with a nod. We'll wait for you guys out here, Bob said.
Matt nodded, and the three men went inside. Bob leaned against the van and lit a smoke.
We're in Texas, Christy said with a smile. We're in Texas, Daniel repeated,
then looked around.
Now what?
Bob smiled and stood up, nodding. He echoed Daniel's sentiment.
Now what, indeed?
You have been listening to Cry Havoc, produced by Greg Lawrence, associate producer Emily Durr. Text copyright 2016 by A American. Production copyright 2017 by Podium Publishing. All rights reserved. If you enjoyed this audiobook, let us know. Take a quick moment to rate and review it on Audible, so we know we're bringing you audiobooks you'll love.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.